You are listening to the Trinity Presbyterian Church podcast from Petaluma, California. Here is this week's adult Sunday school class.
We've been going through a nice little booklet. We're going to take a break today going through a nice little booklet. But just a little reminder, right? Sometimes we need to think about this because it's easy to just be focused on what we do here. But you know, our little booklet says a message from the Orthodox Presbyterian Church. These booklets are a reflection of the fact that we are part of the Orthodox Presbyterian Church. And of course, we've got lots more booklets and information from the OPC on the back there. But Jim and I went to General Assembly. I'm going to sort of make sure we don't just all assume that we know what all these terms are and give a little update about what we did at General Assembly. So a reminder, in the Orthodox Presbyterian Church, we have local congregations all over. We're here in Petaluma. And we have three levels of government within the Orthodox Presbyterian Church. The local government, who's the local, the name that we call the local government here at Trinity Church Government? The session, that's right. The session is a fancy word for board of elders. The elders, we've got myself on there, of course, but we have Jim, we have Jeff, and we have Marlon. There's Marlon. And so that's our board of elders here. Regionally, we're part of the Presbytery of Northern California and Nevada. What churches do we have in the Presbytery of Northern California and Nevada? I'm glad you asked. There's a beautiful map in the hallway there that shows you all our churches in the Presbytery of Northern California and Nevada. And there are various presbyteries throughout the country. And presbyteries are made up of the pastors and delegate elders from the local congregations within the presbytery. We meet, in our case, our presbytery meets two regular meetings during the year. We held one here, of course. We hosted one earlier in the year. And then we send out representatives to General Assembly, which is the annual meeting of the entire denomination. And the way the Orthodox Presbyterian Church does its General Assembly every year, it's about a week long, held usually at a college campus or someplace that can house us and provide a meeting area. And we cover all the work of the church on a denominational level. And these are delegates sent where each presbytery has said, you're able to send this many pastors and this many elders. And this is a little bit different than, say, how our sister denomination in the PCA does it. The PCA, they have their General Assembly, and any pastor or elder who wants to go can go. And they usually hold it in like a stadium because there's so many people that go come to it. Yeah. And so we have a limited number because it's delegated from each presbytery. The result is it's around 150 or so people at our General Assembly each time.
One very big difference from us and the PCA, they'll have a large number, but they have to pay to attend. They have to pay for the travel, they have to pay for their room, they have to pay for their rental car, where we get assistance from our denomination to get there. We don't have an admission fee, and our room and board is covered.
Yeah, so the denomination pays for all the expenses of getting the commissioners out, which means you guys pay. So thank you for sending us to Assembly. You know, we give money to the church here, and our church gives money to the Assembly. If you remember when Marlon does that budget report, there's different funds that we send out money. One of them is the General Assembly Operating Fund, and that's what's used to pay for Jim and I to go to General Assembly, or for the Assembly to happen every year. And so, and as a little... just a little note, our denomination, I love the way it does it. They have suggested giving amounts. There's absolutely no actual requirement. Meaning, I think some denominations, there's like sort of dues that you have to pay. That's not the way it works in the Orthodox Presbyterian Church. They say, here's a suggested amount based on membership, but if we don't give that, they're not gonna come knocking on our door and saying, pay up. And if we get more than that, they're gonna just say, thank you. So it's kind of a cool way it works. So from our presbytery, we sent three ministers and three ruling elders. We sent the Reno pastor, Scott Johnson. We sent the South City pastor, Michael Grosso, but that's the pulpit where Carl Erickson was for many years, and then myself. And then for our elders, we sent, of course, Jim, and we sent the Reno elder, Adam Gustafson, and we sent our Monterey Bay Church, Andres Serviak's elder, one of their elders. So we had a nice time of not only getting to spend time with brothers from the whole General Assembly, but also some concentrated time with our own presbytery folks, too. So it was a good time. The moderator this year was John Shaw. What's the moderator? The moderator is the guy who stands up in front and says, is there a motion for this? Or do I hear a second? Or, you know, they moderate the meeting for the session. And so that's picked annually. Every year at the beginning of the assembly, they pick someone. And it's voted on. And some years, it's been a three, four people, and it's been a vote. I've had one or two times, I think, where not very many people were voted for. But this year, there's a few people put forward, and John Shaw. Who's John Shaw? John Shaw is the Home Missions General Secretary, meaning for our Home Missions work of the assembly, of the denomination, he's the sort of head staff member. He sort of is like the oversight paid staff member. We have committees that oversee these different ministries. But committees are made up of people who it's not their full-time job, right? Like, I could be potentially on a committee, but my full-time job is here, right? And so the committee will hire some staff to be paid administrative staff. And so John Shaw is the head paid staff for overseeing on a day-to-day basis all of the home missions work of the denomination. And home missions, remember, a big part of that is church planting efforts. We'll talk more about that in a moment. But it was nice. I got to see some old friends. Got to see some old seminary students of mine, some old church members from the past. Got to see one of my professors, Dr. Brian Estelle, for example. He was my Hebrew professor. He's in the OPC, and he was there. And you might remember Dr. Estelle spoke at a Reformation rally a number of years ago. And if you really remember, he spoke at my ordination service. And we've asked him, and he's accepted to be our speaker at this year's Reformation Rally. So we've not had a Reformation Rally since 2018. 2019, power was out in the whole city of Nevada. We had to cancel last minute. 2020, well, and 21, we were still, you know, sort of recovering. And then 2022, we were moving and getting this place all ready. So now with gusto, we are resuming, Lord willing. It's actually going to be the first Sunday in November, so 1 week after we might normally have had it. Every so often we've had to adjust the schedule a little bit, either the last Sunday in October, first Sunday in November. But the first Sunday in November, it's the plan to have our Reformation service, so Dr. Brian Estelle will be our honored guest, and looking forward to that. One of the people that I appreciated running into was Don Duff. Don Duff is a very... a long-standing member in the OPC and servant in many ways, and he had told me when I met him last time that his wife, Peggy Duff, was the daughter of our church planter who planted this church. Who planted this church? His name was Robert Graham. Well, Don told me he had this wife, but I'd never actually met the wife. But she was there this time, so I got a picture of Peggy Duff, and really appreciated being able to have that connection. So I got a picture of me and the first PK daughter, so I said I need to get one with Sarah, and then one with Zoe, and then I can put them all side by side and see. That'd be kind of cool. In the airport, we got to the airport on the first day at 5 in the morning. The bus didn't come to 9:30. So we had a lot of time to kill, and I'm thinking I'll take a little nap, you know, just sitting there, Jim and I. Well, 30 minutes into my trying to fall asleep, Pastor David Graves showed up and woke us up. Now, who's Pastor David Graves? Well, I joke the whole time that he's, we're his feeder church. He's the pastor of Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, which is where, if you remember, Danielle had transferred a membership up there. Before that, the OYs had transferred up there. So as people exodus California, they seem to keep ending up in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, where he was. So we had a good time hanging out with him. And every evening at the assembly, they had a fireside fellowship on the lawn of the president's house. This was held, by the way, in case I didn't tell you, in Chicago, at Trinity Christian College. Trinity Christian College in Chicago, which is not a huge campus, but it's not a small one. So we had a nice little time of fellowship every evening there. Most evenings, I think a couple times You know, before, this is how you know I'm getting old. Before, I never missed one of those evening hangouts. I think I missed two of them this time because I was, oh, I had this extra sleep. So the assembly started on Tuesday night, and it began with worship and communion, which I thought was really sweet because this is a meeting of the church. And so we had a worship service. They did daily devotions through the whole time. And every 11 o'clock or so, they had a scheduled devotional time. Every time we reassembled, we started with song and prayer. So we were singing and praying to the Lord the whole time. On Sunday morning then, of course, you get the day off for Sunday, which is nice. Otherwise, they're working until like 8:30 every night. But Sunday morning, we all got to go to different churches in the area. And so we did ours over at Bethel OPC in Wheaton, Illinois. And the guest speaker was actually Hiro Hockenbord, the Ukraine missionary we were praying for, who was in town for the assembly. Jim?
We got Saturday night off, because we would go from 8:30 in the morning normally to 8:30 at night. We knocked off at 5, and the reason why, and I think this goes neglected by many of us, is to prepare for the Sabbath. So we ended our work at 5 o'clock to prepare for the Sabbath Saturday night for Sunday, which is very, very important. And I think it shows a pattern that we should all contemplate, is preparing the night before for Sunday.
And I like to quote Pastor Miller on this. He said, if you don't do that, you might end up clipping the wings of the Sabbath. Is that the appropriate quote? Clipping the wings of the Sabbath. You know, got to get to bed early, so you know. Maybe Sarah might have was in danger of this sometimes growing up. Okay, and so then on Sunday evening, back on campus. By the way, the churches that helped hosted us in the area for the OPC churches, they gave us a huge, nice lunch, which after the food at the campus cafeteria was well appreciated. And so then Sunday afternoon evening, we come back on campus and they have a combined OPC evening worship service for all those churches that hosted us. They were all invited to come on campus and have a huge big worship service together. It was really nice. They have a nice big auditorium there. A beautiful pipe organ that was still a little bit on the loud side from when I was there 5 years ago, but they toned it down a little bit. 5 years ago, I commented how it was too booming loud. It was still a little loud, but it was better than before.
5 years of hearing loss.
That's a long way. It sounded fine this time. What's that, Mark? And so, other thing I think is really cool, throughout the week, we had fraternal delegates come and speak for 5-10 minutes to the assembly. What's a fraternal delegate? Well, you know, the Orthodox Presbyterian Church, OPC, sometimes we joke and say it stands for the one perfect church, which isn't true, of course. But we have these other like-minded Reformed Presbyterian denominations, both in the United States and literally throughout the world. And so we invite these like-minded denominations that we have connection with to come and share a word and an update from their denominations. And we get invited to do the same. And so our denomination will send out delegates to theirs. And it's an effort toward ecumenicity in a way that's built on substance. Maybe over time, some of those fraternal relations will result in merging those denominations, you know, and so it's a chance to us to be able to continue to develop real ecumenicity, whereas I think a lot of ecumenicity is done in name only. We'll pretend we're united when really we're not. And I saw your pastor, by the way, Charles.
Oh.
What was his name again? I'm drawing a blank.
Watson?
Yes. He went to find me and say how much he misses you.
No.
Yes. And I'm sorry, you had a question there? Yeah.
You said other like. Could you expand on that just a little bit?
Yeah. So a number of them, literally from all over the world, but also local. So for example, here in America, there's the PCA, the Presbyterian Church in America. They came and gave an address. The RPCNA is also here, Reformed Presbyterian Church in North America. They came and gave an address. The URCNA, United Reformed Churches in North America, they came and gave an address. That's like the denomination where Godfrey is a part of, for example, Robert Godfrey. But then there are also other ones, like the Church of Scotland, a couple of Reformed churches out in Australia, which I barely understood those people, because they weren't, I'm not sure what language they were speaking, but...
They were funny.
But I understood them. I'm kidding. They had accents, obviously. I worked through it, you know. So we had people literally from all over the world.
Just a little correction on your comment. He was my pastor, but you are my pastor.
Thank you, Brother Dave. Praise the Lord. Amen.
There's more than 17 churches and denominations that we have fraternal fellowship with. And then we have various others that less degrees.
Yeah. And we actually had some from both. We had some who are in the full-fledged fraternal relations, like brother-sister denomination. And then our next level is, I think, is a corresponding relationship where we're trying to dialogue and understand where each other's at and help each other. And we had some representatives from both classes, which is nice. It's part of how you develop those relationships and work toward ecumenicity. So, good. What's that?
We removed one denomination.
That's true, and I've got that somewhere.
Yeah.
The reason I'm pausing is I don't remember the name. Oh, it was the Church of Netherlands.
Yeah.
Reformed Church of Netherlands. We actually removed our relationship with them. They have started ordaining women, and we've encouraged them not to go that route. And the idea of our fraternal relations that we have with folks is we're trying to establish we're on the same page about the bulk of what we're doing type of thing. So that, for example, if they want to have me come and fill their pulpit some Sunday because I'm in the area, they know what they're getting and vice versa. And so we have these sort of fraternal relationships that should mean something. And not just be really superficial, sort of, oh yeah, we're all Christians, which is not to say that they're not Christians, but in terms of us being able to more closely cooperate with these relationships, we do a lot of stuff in very practical ways. So for example, I keep mentioning Hiro Hakaboard. He is on the mission field in Ukraine. He is an OPC missionary, but the Ukrainian field is not an OPC mission work. What do I mean? It's a PCA mission work. The PCA are the ones organizing, leading it, spearheading it, and we are essentially lending them a missionary to help. But they're the ones leading it up. And we have a freedom of doing that because we're all on the same page. And so that would be an awkward situation, you can imagine, if you're working with a denomination that has ordained women when we don't have ordained women on the field. That would be obviously a challenge. So that's an example where sometimes, while we're trying to pursue forming these relationships, we also sometimes back away from some of those relationships too. Okay, so, you know, I'm kind of right now just giving you a feel of what we did all week and some of the, I think, really cool worship sort of components to all of it. What I wanted to do then is kind of walk you through some of the main updates from our different committees. So basically, the assembly has a lot of it all week long. We have standing committees that are reporting on different aspects of the ministry. And so, here's a few little tastes of the different reports. So one of the committees, we have a committee for the historian, as well as a specific historian, and he gave a little report. This is one of the shorter ones, but I think a very important one. He said that this year marks the 100th anniversary of the publication of the book Christianity and Liberalism. That book is written by J. Gresham Machen, and J. Gresham Machen was really the leader among us who ended up being part of the Orthodox Presbyterian Church. He was, in the early 1900s, saying, our denomination, the mainline Presbyterian, is sending out missionaries, for example, to work with people who don't believe that Jesus is the only way, right? And it was being called theological liberalism. That book is, it's not about politics, Christianity and liberals, not about politics, it's about theology. Christianity versus liberal theology. Not liberal politics, liberal theology. And his book, the contention was, Christianity and liberal theology are two different religions. But see, that's not what the liberal theologians were saying. They were just saying, we're just Christian like you are. But they had some very different things that they taught. And so Machen and others stood against that. And it ultimately came to a head, and he got removed from the denomination, as well as a number of us at that time in the 1930s, and they formed in 1936 the Orthodox Presbyterian Church, which if you heard 1936, that means 2036 is coming up pretty soon. So they're already talking about gearing up for what the 100th anniversary of the Orthodox Presbyterian Church might look like and some of the things they might do to celebrate that time. We do have copies of the Christian Liberalism in the library upstairs. I even have a first edition in my library. I'm not limited to that, but sorry. Okay, some stats of the Orthodox Residing Church. During 2022, last year, the number of local churches grew by 5 to 301. So we have 301 churches in our denomination. We also have 31 now mission works. These are church plants that are trying to form. That does not include, for example, the work we're doing in Livermore right now, which is sort of a pre-church plant, trying to see if we could have a church plant. Our total membership grew by a little over 1% to 32,720 members. Morning worship increased 6.78%, which is approaching sort of pre-pandemic levels. As you imagine, a lot of attendance issues over the last few years. Total offerings for the denomination increased by almost 5%. The budget that we talked a little bit about, budget numbers, the worldwide outreach budget for this coming year was set at $4,870,000. What's the worldwide outreach budget cover? Remember, that's foreign missions, home missions, and a little bit to Christian education. Christian education does things like at these bulletins and stuff like that, New Horizons, other sorts of things. We do our thank offering every October, and our thank offering goes toward the worldwide outreach budget, and we send some money every month as well as a church. Part of our main budget has money going to the worldwide outreach. Of all the funds that the denomination takes, it's the worldwide outreach ones that are the most directly to ministry. Like I said, we have a fund that we contribute to that gets people to have, you know, travel for assembly or business, but the one that's the most direct ministry is these worldwide outreach budget numbers. And so that's an important part of what we contribute to.
Total membership of the denomination again?
32,000,
I think.
32,720. That's right. And apparently that's based on statistical reports that were approximately 98% accounted for. So there's not 100% complete accounting there, but it's close. So yeah. Home missions gave a report. I mentioned the mission works that we have. They last year actually were supporting up to 37 different mission fields with some financial assistance. Five new mission works were started, but six ended their funding. I'm trying to figure out how to list the other number I gave you, but it's in the general ballpark, so I may have copied something wrong there. But the point is, what does Home Missions Committee do? We have a Home Missions Committee of the nomination, which actually the full name is Committee of Home Missions and Church Extension. That's the whole fancy mouthful name. But they are trying to help provide financial aid for different church plants in the denomination, including they also help support regional home missionaries. What's a regional home missionary? Well, it's actually, glad you asked me, because we're trying to get one in our presbytery. A regional missionary is someone who is usually tasked by the presbytery, the regional church, to spearhead getting church plants started. Again, we have a committee in our presbytery called the Home Missions Committee that tries to do that. But the committee is made up of pastors and elders like me who have normal jobs, right? And so it's not like we have a lot of extra time to put toward trying to do this. And they're really encouraging more along these lines, you hire a regional home missionary who's a pastor whose full-time job is doing church planting in our region. So we've been actively looking as a presbytery for a few years now, trying to find the right guy who'd be a good fit in our area. We've interviewed two guys very seriously, looked at a whole bunch of different resumes, essentially, but we haven't quite found the right guy yet. And so we're hoping and praying we'll meet up the right guy for that job. But the Home Missions Committee of the nomination is going to help fund that and help provide resources and support to that person when we finally decide to move forward. And in fact, there's other presbyters that are also looking for regional missionaries right now, so that's something we can pray for the denomination as a whole. I think we have people that can be focused on this. We can plant more churches. That's the hope. So foreign missions is another big report that came. And foreign missions, I'll say a few things about this, but foreign missions is such an extensive report that there's no way I could do justice to summarizing their report here in this little time. But the way the denomination assembly works, we have general assembly, is a commissioner gets assigned to what they call an advisory committee. And that advisory committee goes and meets with the normal standing committee and gets their report in detail. So then on the floor of assembly, the committee gives a report, but then the advisory committee says, we met in detail with them and here's additional comments we have about their report. Well, Jim was on the advisory committee for the foreign missions committee. So if you have questions for missions committee, Jim just can't wait to tell you all about it. So it's a pretty good, fun committee to be an advisory committee on, right? Because, I mean, again, if I got on the statistician committee one, and that was like, yay, you know, numbers, you know, but Jim's hearing about missionary X, missionary Y, right? All these cool mission fields. So, but Hiro Hockenbort was at the assembly, and I didn't ask the question that everyone's been asking me, is how did he get out of Ukraine? Apparently he did, and he's going to be going back soon. Maybe he's already back right now, but he came out and got to not only hear his address at the assembly, but then the church we went to on Sunday, like I said, he actually preached, and then he gave for Sunday school a presentation about the Ukraine work. And one of the things, of course, they were talking about was sort of going through the timeline and that first wave when the war first started, how many refugees came and just like spent one night with them, and then the next day they moved on farther west to the border, and then waited for hours and hours and days to actually be able to get out of the western border. Remember, they are in Lviv, which is on the western side, which has been relatively free of war effects. So they did show some pictures on the early days. They actually did get a few missiles that did hit Lviv. I hadn't heard that reported before. And he actually said, I can't, we're not allowed to show these photos really in any more of a public setting. As you can imagine, they don't want the enemy to see where did their missiles hit, I guess. So anyways, it was kind of interesting on that. But they said, preparing for COVID had helped them because they had a big overflow area for social distancing. And so now that they have all these refugees pouring through, COVID went away, they said, as soon as that happened. And there was no social distancing, but they had the room, so they had their main room and a whole overflow room because they did have quite a swell of people there coming as refugees passing through. He mentioned that a number of those folks that left initially, now that it's figured out where the war's really been going on most, a lot of them have returned back to country and back to their homes. But at first, people were just trying to get out. They didn't know what was going to be going on. They did talk about the Crates for Ukraine. Our deacons sent some support for the Crates for Ukraine and how much they've been helping stock those and send them out to different areas that were affected within the country. And they put a big OBC or a big Ukraine Missions Church sticker on there. And they would have some of these refugees coming in later, finding their church and saying, we got your relief, thank you so much. And I thought it was really cool. One effect they said is that there's so much of the Orthodox church out there that hadn't had much experience interacting with a Protestant, let alone a Reformed Protestant church. And it made to those folks, you guys are weird over there. And then they realized, you guys aren't weird, and you guys love Jesus, and you guys care about Scripture. And so it actually gave a connection with a lot of people that otherwise had not had a connection with Reformed Christianity. So that was cool to hear. Jerry Farnick also was in town. First General Assembly he said he's ever gone to. Remember, Jerry Farnick has come by to visit a number of times, missionary to Czech Republic. And he's got, his wife is from the Vado area, Amberin area, knew Trudy from growing up. And the only reason he was at General Assembly is because his daughter Pavlina got married a little north of there about the same time, so then he just came after the wedding to be at General Assembly. So it's great to hear from them. They're close enough that they've gotten a number of refugees coming from the war too, but of course there's a language difference in that case. The people coming from Ukraine aren't speaking what they're speaking in Czech Republic. Yes, Yelena.
Well, I wanted to go back to the Huckabirds, right? They're going back to Lviv, right?
That's right.
Did they say anything about that city, how bad it was bombed?
No, Lviv was almost not bombed at all. It's doing fine. In fact, they said it's a sort of defiance to the Russian aggressors. They sort of hold themselves out as we're doing business as usual. This hasn't affected us in Lviv.
A beautiful city. Yeah. And that city, it looks more like a European city. It doesn't have anything to do like with Russia.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Gore, I've been there.
Oh, good. Okay. You want more questions about Lviv? Ask Yelena then afterward. The big thing that came out of the four missions report, and this is a big item of prayer, like first time, almost first time ever, but not ever, but first time in a long while, they basically do not have enough four missionaries, meaning they have jobs to fill, but not any fresh applicants to consider. So they tried to poach your pastors. I said I'm in a four mission field already, thank you though. But no, they're praying. They're calling, putting out the call. We need four missionaries for the field. So that's an item of prayer. We'll pray for that. The regional missionary tried to poach me, by the way, too, for here. But I told him no as well. We're all working together here. So we're all working together. Christian Education gave a report. Again, they're the ones who put together things like this and the New Horizons. But the big issue that was discussed was. For many years now, they've been working kind of in a process to work on modernizing the Westminster standards in terms of not doctrine, not theology, nothing substance, but the language obviously is more like King James era English. So the he executeth instead of executes, stuff like that. The these and the thous, as well as some archaic words, some words that we don't use anymore. And you could imagine this brought a lot of discussion and debate because we want to make sure if we make any changes that we're not changing the doctrines that were agreed to. So there's a lot of debate on how to move forward, and they took the let's move slowly forward approach, which is very OPC and very, I think it was a wise compromise. So instead of, they presented the work, and it is, in a sense, could be considered ready to move forward with trying to amend our standards, but they said, let's not do that yet. Let's have Christian Ed publish it in a non our constitution, but a study guide edition, the work that they did, get it into the hands of the churches for a period of time, so they can work with it, use it, and see if these changes commend themselves. And then in a few years, they're going to bring it back to the denomination, say, at assembly, are we ready now to consider either other changes to improve it, or are we ready now to begin the process, which is an elaborate process, and kind of like amending the U.S. Constitution, something similar to that, but an elaborate process to update our Westminster standards. And so basically, they've sort of slowed it down. Let's get it in the hands of our churches so they can start using it. And through that, it's like if you're going through it, and we're teaching on question number 5 of the catechism, and well, this word here, after I've been thinking about it, the original is this, right? And so that's how you can learn and see if there's some changes and improvements that need to happen. So that's sort of the compromised opinion on how to move forward that they decided upon. We did have a report from the Diaconal Committee. And remember, the Diaconal Committee does a few things. They do provide support to our deacons here, including training things like conferences. And they gave a little slideshow of their most recent Diaconal Conference. And I said, hey, I think that was Diego on that screen. Because remember, Diego and Renee went to that conference this year. So that was kind of cool to see. But really, the big work that the Diaconal Committee does is on the mission field. When you're doing mission field work, you don't have deacons probably in most of those cases. So the Diaconal Committee of the denomination helps provide mercy and ministry in our fields that we're working on. So like the Ukraine relief, that was spearheaded by the Diaconal Committee.
It really helped down lot at Neon Church in Kentucky.
Yes.
That had the flood.
That's a good point. That's a good point. Thank you. I forgot all about that, so thank you. Yeah. Yeah, it was really, they showed a lot of pictures in there. The damage, that flood, just really, oh. They did have judicial matters that came before the presbytery or the assembly. Usually there's two or three judicial cases on average when I've gone to these. There was really only one real judicial case this time. And it was really more of a process question. And it was kind of an interesting process question. When I phrase it, you'll think, well, I know what the answer should be, but it's actually the right answer is what they decided to do. They asked a question about the process for going through church discipline. One of the lines talking about going to trial, the Book of Church Order said, and they shall then appoint a trial. And the question was, does shall mean shall? Of course, you would think shall means shall, right? But they decided shall did not mean shall. In other words, there are circumstances when normally the next step is to start a trial when it gets to a certain place in a judicial matter. But there's all kinds of obvious practical situations where there's a reason why the sort of summary here doesn't really apply in practice. Like in the case of a trial between two conflicted parties, if they worked everything out and there was reconciliation and healing and restoration, it may not make sense to move forward with the trial. And so they determined, yeah, that the intention of the Book of Church Order as it dealt with trials was not to sort of give this wooden apparatus, but there does need to be some common sense in applying it. And so this was an example where shall didn't mean shall. Ordinarily, it would be what you do, but in this case, it was appropriate to pay. Didn't move forward with a particular trial that was in mind. In our last minute or two, I'll just say there's a number of other things I didn't get a chance to really go into, but some of the stuff involved creating committees to visit presbyteries and individuals that maybe had some conflicts and issues and try to bring biblical reconciliation. We got some great reports back on how there was fruit in those areas. And that's also, you know, beyond committee reports, hearing that brothers are working through difficulties, the differences, granting forgiveness in cases where it's needed. And so it's also cool to see that the assembly is even a part of that too. Any questions in my last minute or so here? I could say more, but I only have so much time for you here today. Mary.
Well, my question should have been asked right at the beginning. How was it that you and Jim were selected, or how is it that
Every presbytery has their own freedom to choose however they want. Some presbyteries do it like, we're going to pick our assembly members every time. And it could be then only the most senior, skilled people get picked every time. You can tell our presbytery doesn't do it that way because it's in Gemini, you know? In our presbytery, it's basically like there's a list for the elders and a list for the ministers. And once you go, you can move to the bottom of the list. And so then next year when they decide who's going to send, they start at the top list, they say, so-and-so, are you willing to go this year? Oh, you can't do it? Okay. So, and so they go down until they get enough yeses. And if it gets down far enough, maybe you can go 2 years in a row because you said yes. And then once you go again, you're back on the bottom. When you don't go, then your name is getting moved up slowly to the top again. So some people, they're smart and wise, and they say, this venue I know isn't very good. I'm going to say no this year so that I can... Next year's going to be a nice venue, then I'll move a little farther up to the top. And I think some of the brothers have a little wisdom on that theme.
Very briefly, what's the difference between OPC and PCA?
We have the same doctrinal standards in terms of the Westminster Confession of Faith and Catechisms. We do have different constitutions that have a lot of similarity. When I say constitutions, our form of government, our discipline, and our worship. Interestingly, on the PCA, their worship section is, to say it in the most brief way, is sort of like a suggestion, whereas in the OPC, it's sort of the expectation. So like this is a summary sort of our worship approach. And that's why in the PCA you see greater diversity when it comes to worship, because they have a similar sort of worship guide, but for them, it's more of a, here's a thing to consider. Versus for us, it's this is sort of what we generally expect you to arrive around. The PCA is about 10 times bigger than us, so that has some dynamics. Being bigger tends to mean that there can be greater diversity. Of churches that are very similar to the OPC within it, they are probably a similar number of the OPCs, but they would be a minority then within the OPC. And then you got some similar size of that are on the more progressive side that are also in there. So that breeds to some of it. And historically, if I can be super superficial, we essentially come from the northern branch of the Presbyterian Church. They come from the southern branch of the mainline Presbyterian Church. And we have tried, but didn't get it across the finish line, to merge back together. That hasn't happened. At this point, I don't think it'll happen unless the PCA were to have some sort of split where the conservative folks broke off from the more progressive folks. And then I think there could be a renewed discussion of the OPC merging with the conservative folks, if they so desired and we so desired, yeah.
Next year's General Assembly will be in Seattle, Washington, June 19th.
There you go. Mm-hmm. Charles?
Just as a comment. Mm. I came, when I left North Carolina, I was a member of the PCA for many years. But because the OPC that I was traveling to, which is 75 miles one way, for over 10 years, moved even farther away. So I had no choice. So we, Catherine and I, looked for a church. God blessed us with a PCA church right here in Fayetteville. I'm telling you, just as you were saying, I couldn't really tell the difference between their service and the service I was in Raleigh, North Carolina, where I was traveling to, from Fayetteville. And we were a member of that church all the way into the time we moved to Hawaii and then moved our membership to Jim. That time, and we were like the pastor there was such a passion pastor. Even when he did simple things like when a child get baptized,
yeah,
it was he. Yeah, I can see what you're saying because I, in my time in the military, I went to a lot of different churches trying to find because I moved so much. Church, I actually got up in the middle of service and left. Because of what they were saying. Because we just were looking for a church to go to. And that was Missouri. I should remember. But
I'm going to interrupt this both here. Great question, but we need to break. And let me close. Dear God, thank you for the OBC. Thank you for our participation. And bless us on our break and prepare us for worship. In Jesus' name.
Amen. Amen.